This is Whitley Strieber, and you have made a courageous choice. You're listening to Dreamland, a truly free, non-commercial voice on the internet and the IBC radio network. We say it like it is. We take you where others will not take you. Dreamland, welcome to the edge of the world.
Sitting in for Whitley Strieber, this is William Henry from Nashville. This is Dreamland. Our guest today has come to describe himself as everything and nothing, everywhere and nowhere, all possibility and none. He's a voice from the indefinable all that is for all who are attempting to override the program called the Matrix that controls humanity, a race lost in a cosmic game, drowning in the rules of what he terms the God program. We know this voice as David Icke. In his new book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion, he beckons us to a place beyond the matrix, a still point where nothing vibrates and everything just is. Infinite oneness and all possibility are its names. This is the unknown country, this is Dreamland, and we welcome David Icke. Hello, David, how are you?
I'm good, William. You?
Oh, it's fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us today. I understand that you've just returned from South Africa.
Yeah, I spent an amazing 10 days with someone who's become one of my closest friends called Credo Mutwa, who's a Zulu shaman, but he's known as a Senusi. It's the highest level of their shamanistic stream. He's 83 now. He's
wow.
been initiated into the ancient African knowledge now for 50 years or more. And we just hit it off the first time we met some years ago, and we've become really, really close friends. And what's fantastic, William, when you meet people like Credo, is that you realize that although we may use different names, we're all actually talking about the same basic knowledge. And what confuses us and gives us the feeling of division and difference is just the language we use. For instance, well, one of the things he did for me was throw the animal bones. Now, to people in the West, they'd go, throw the animal bones, it's a witch doctor, oh!
Mm-hmm.
And all these bones were animal bones that actually go back a long time. And they're carved into shapes and symbols. And they just read the energy field in exactly the way that things like tarot cards and rune stones and stuff like that do. In fact, Credo's wife, not only is a bones thrower and amazingly accurate like he is, she's also a tarot card reader. So it's kind of interesting to see that we're all talking about the same basic themes, but we just use different language, and that confuses us. And Credo's fantastic because he sits at that cusp point between the ancient African knowledge and what we call the modern or Western world, and he can talk both languages, which is why it's very easy to spend time with him and see that indeed we are all talking about the same one knowledge in only language forms that are different.
Mm-hmm. You know, when Whitley interviewed me recently, he asked why I wanted to talk with you. We had announced this interview, and I told him that our mutual buddy Tim Crawford at UFO TV had...
Oh, Tim, yeah.
Yeah. At UFO TV had sent me a copy of your Matrix DVD, which I thought was phenomenal. And what I had told Whitley is, I said, look, here's a guy, David Icke, he's been on this path a long time, he's on an amazing path of discovery, and I just sense that he's about to go through the Stargate to the next level of understanding. And I knew that you had a new book coming up out about this transformation, and I was really excited to talk with you about it. And so now that I've had a chance to read Infinite Love is the Only Truth and Everything Else is Illusion, I first want to congratulate you on your 15th book. I mean, that's astonishing.
Is that how many it is now?
Yeah. I mean, that's...
I don't count them.
You know, I keep...
As soon as I finish one, I start looking around, you know, going on the path to for the next stage. Because what you say, William, is absolutely right. It's funny enough, when I wrote my first book on these kind of subjects, going back to 91 now, called Truth Vibrations, the opening line is something like, I'm just starting a journey and maybe you'll come with me, because it was clear to me then that this was going to be a journey. And the thing is that I find, there's a great quote that's attributed to the Greek philosopher Socrates, which is, wisdom is knowing how little we know. And what tends to happen too often, I think, is that people do really great work at one level of understanding, whether it's the five sense conspiracy and the banking conspiracy and all that stuff. And that's great. They do fantastic work. I'll hand up to them. But if you stop there, you're only going to get part of the picture. And unfortunately, one of the great things that edits people off the path of continuing to walk is belief systems, whether it's religious belief system or whatever. They start to come across information, understandings that are completely at odds with their belief system, and they tend to either dismiss them or simply won't go there because they know their belief system will be under pressure. What I've done, because I just want to know what the truth is within me. That's my prime motivation. I really want to know the nature of what we're involved in here, the nature of reality, life, everything. And so I just keep walking, and it's taken me from five sense investigation of, like I say, banking scams and 9/11 scams and all that stuff into the interdimensional level of it. And now with this book, it's a leap into the structure of the illusory reality within which all the other stuff actually unfolds.
Yeah, I think and that's a great place to start. In fact, let's begin sort of with the root chakra of your work and wind our way through your path of transformation. The world, you've said, is controlled by a network of secret societies manipulated by the Illuminati, who have structured our world to create maximum fear and stress. And this is because, I believe you say, that in the interspaces of the Matrix is a lost reptilian race that feeds on human fear, which means that Earth, in a sense, is a fear farm, and then DNA then becomes the fear antenna or transmitter that connects us to that Matrix. Talk about how you came to this conclusion.
Well, let's maybe make the point straight away. I didn't go looking for it. I mean, you don't sit in a darkened room and think, I just concluded this is what's going on, because from our conditioned reality, I mean, it's like, what did he say? What happened was, and my life's been like this. It'll take too long to talk about it now, but I had an amazing series of experiences when I was still a television presenter with the BBC, and just afterwards, that just blew my head off. And for about 3 months, I didn't know what planet I was on. This is back in 1990, where, or 1991. And when everything settled down, I looked at the world in a completely different way, and it was like a veil had lifted. Instead of hearing the words of politicians and people like that, I was reading the silences and the white bits between them. And I started to hit this amazing synchronistic path from the early 1990s, which was leading me to knowledge and information and people who were researchers, yes, but also people who were on the inside of this, people who had been victims of it. And very clearly a structure emerged of a few interbreeding families who were sitting at the top of a compartmentalized multi-level pyramid of control, in which they controlled the banking cartel, the political system, the education system, the pharmaceutical cartel, the oil cartel, the transnational corporations, the media at ownership level. And when I realized how the structure worked, it was a bit like putting the straight bits together in a jigsaw. Once you've got that frame within which it works, you can put the pieces in the middle together quicker. And so it's got faster and faster as the 90s unfolded and became the 21st century, that these puzzle pieces have gone together. And it's no longer a theory, in the sense that things I was writing about, not just me, there's loads of people out there. If it was just me, I'd think, why is it just you? No, this is unbelievable numbers of people out there now who are researching this from their different levels, their different points of input and different perspectives, and coming to the same basic conclusions. And we're now seeing this centralized Orwellian state, that this centralized fascist Orwellian state that we've been talking about all this time, now unfolding before our eyes. And it's happening for a simple reason, a simple equation. If you are the few and you wish to control the many, you have to centralize decision-making. The more points of decision-making there are, the more diversity of decision-making, the less control you're going to have over those decisions. So if you look at the way society has moved, and it's moving so rapidly now, it's moving more and more to fewer and fewer, making more and more decisions affecting more and more people. This is what we have with the European Union, and as I pointed out in my books for years, where this is leading is a centralized global state with a world government, world central bank, world army imposing the will of the world government, a world currency, and a microchip population. Now, when I talk about this now, people go, well, I can see it, mate. It's happening. They're talking about microchipping, and they look. But when I started out, they were going, you're mad. And so there is a sea change, and particularly since 9/11, William, really, where a lot of people have opened their minds and thought, and not only just opened their minds, but intuitively started feeling, hey, there's something not right here. What's going on? But by the time that had started to happen, I was already moving on into the interdimensional level and stretching people's incredulity even further, because I started from about the mid-1990s, maybe about 97, I started to meet people. Again, my life's been like this since 1989, something like that. It's very synchronistic. What happens is, and it still goes on today, a subject or a theme will come into my life for the first time, and then suddenly, wherever I go, I'm meeting people, seeing things, experiencing things, reading things that relate to that subject or that theme. And the reptilian thing came in from about, like I say, 97, 98, and really started to build in terms of the number of people who were telling me of their same basic experience, which was of seeing an apparently human form, a human being, transform into a reptilian-type entity and then back again. Sometimes it was quick, sometimes it stayed in a reptilian form for longer. And I was meeting people all over the world that were telling me this story, and I wasn't going looking for them, I was just walking into them. And one of the big things, again, in relation to this, William, comes down to Credo Mutua, because the reason we got together was I was on a speaking tour of South Africa, and I got this call from Credo, and he said, we must meet. He said, I've just read your book, The Biggest Secret. He said, how do you know this? About the Chitahuri. And the Chitahuri translates as the children of the serpent or the children of the python. And of course my ears picked up immediately, and over I was meeting him, and we talked for hours, for days. And he told me how the theme of shape-shifting reptilian, quote, gods, who interbred with humans, creating a hybrid race that became the royal demigods of ancient society, was fundamentally part of his black African culture. And that, and when I was talking to him only last week, he was telling me of the number of women who are in Africa, out in the bush, who are coming to him pregnant, having not had sex, and telling him that it's a reptilian entity had appeared and been involved in this. And then within about 3 months or so, the baby's gone. They wake up and the baby's not there anymore. And he's, you know, he's a real feet on the ground guy, Credo. He's got one foot in this Western view of the world and one foot in black African and knowledge and culture. And he has had so many people like this tell him this recurring story. And of course he's experienced it himself. He's seen shape-shifting on many occasions in his life over the last 83 years. And so when people in the black African bush are telling you the same story as someone who's experienced something in Los Angeles or Sydney, Australia or London, England, then you start to see a common theme. Now, what you can do at this point is say, hey, not going there, I can see what people are going to think of me, and you walk away and you stay safe. I'm not interested in staying safe, I'm interested in what's going on. So I put that information out, and what's interesting is you then become a magnet for people who want to tell you about their experiences. So it's far more, it's not a common thing, this experiencing of shape-shifting, but it's far less uncommon than people would believe, given the fact they never hear about it.
This is William Henry. This is Dreamland. We'll be right back.
Why should you subscribe to UnknownCountry.com and put down your hard-earned cash? Well, there's two good reasons. The first one is the website is important. It is the only place where you read so many important stories. Virtually the only place that gave you in-depth reporting about the slowing of the Gulf Stream. Do you know that we were reporting this in our Quick Watch over a year ago? We were over a year ahead, even of the scientific community. You won't get that anywhere else. You just will not find your way into the future anywhere better than you will find it with UnknownCountry.com. And another great reason to do it today, you get to listen to me talk to David Icke. He is the subscriber interview this week. And remember, every week subscribers get a special interview. It's well worth it. Join us today. Keep UnknownCountry.com going by clicking on that subscribe tab on the Unknown Country website. Listen up, William Henry's got a new DVD out, and that means something. A lot of you got his DVD, Stargate 2012, absolutely free. Well, now you can get Stargates of the Gods, his brand new DVD, plus Stargate 2012 thrown in, a phenomenal offer. And listen as William tells you about this new DVD, Stargates of the Gods.
An ancient prophecy, a miraculous new spiritual technology, a bright new world. In this hour and a half long talk, I piece together Sumerian, Egyptian, and Mayan artwork and symbolism to reveal their shared ideal, the long-sought Stargate of the Gods, the angelic stairway to heaven. This groundbreaking presentation is loaded with an amazing collection of ancient images never before seen in one place. Get Stargate 2012, my friends. I guarantee you'll watch it time and again.
Get Stargate of the Gods plus Stargate 2012 thrown in absolutely free at the UnknownCountry.com store. Go to the store right now to get them. You know, the UnknownCountry.com store is a very special and unique place. Everything in it is deeply valuable, intellectually, spiritually. It is mind-opening material. I've read practically every book in here. If I haven't read it, Anne has, or William Henry has, or Jim Mars has. These are important books, and our prices are great. William's brand new Stargates of the God DVD, $24.95. The Magdalene Legacy by Lawrence Gardner, phenomenal book, just $19.95. Dr. Roger Lear's latest UFO crash in Brazil, terribly important, $14.95. Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, unobtainable elsewhere, $24.95. Eyes of an Angel, Paul Elder's Beauty, $12.95. Doug Kenyon's Forbidden History, $13.95. The 9/11 in Plain Sight DVD, the lowest price we believe anywhere at $13.95. The list goes on and on and on. Explore the UnknownCountry.com store, and you get excellent security, just as you do from larger websites, because we're small, we're intimate, and if you do have a problem, a real person answers your question via email, usually just about right away. Shop the UnknownCountry.com store.
This is William Henry. This is Dreamland. We're talking today with David Icke. David, in the book, you asked what I consider to be the magic question. What is the human body? And how does it relate to the scenario you're describing with the shape-shifting reptilian?
Well, what's interesting, William, is when you look at what science has already established in its various disciplines, it's actually sussed a great deal of the nature of reality already in its illusory nature. But the disciplines of science don't tend to talk to each other, and there is a party line often, which a lot of scientists will stick to and not go beyond, because it's safer that way, not least in securing funding and prestige, not to go beyond, quote, the norm. But when you look into the fact that atoms that make up our so-called solid world are not solid at all. When you think that what we call the five senses are electrical signals interpreted by the brain, when you think that the brain is decoding these signals into an apparent 3D holographic reality, just like a television decodes waveforms into flat pictures, so our brain is decoding waveforms into holographic, apparently three-dimensional forms, which we think is the world around us, but actually only exists in our head. So when you start to put these basic things together that have been established, well, it's clear that our reality is an illusion. And we get this recurring theme where people in, you know, various New Age and other areas of thought say, you create your own reality, we create our own reality. And clearly that's the case, because there's a number of stories that I tell in this book, and the previous one tells from the time loop, of how stage hypnotists hypnotize people to believe certain things, and that is what these people actually experienced. And what is happening here? The hypnotist is implanting a belief into the person's mind, stroke brain, into his computer. And what happens then is, as the brain decodes reality, it decodes it on the basis of the person's belief in what is real. Psychological and scientific experiments have revealed that we change 50% and more of the detail of information that enters the brain before it hits the visual cortex and becomes what we think is the world around us. And we do this work has shown, on the basis of our belief. And I told them, I tell a story in the book of a guy called Tom who was at a party which was experienced by a man called Michael Tolbert, who wrote a brilliant book, The Holographic Universe.
Amazing book, absolutely.
Yeah, brilliant book. And his father hosted the party, and he got a stage hypnotist along. And he did his various party tricks. And he sat this guy, Tom, down. And he got him to eat a potato, thinking it was an apple. Now, this, how does that happen? It's real simple. You implant the belief in the brain that it is experiencing an apple, and therefore, as the electrical signals from the potato come into the brain, they are decoded into the taste of an apple. It's what you believe is what, and you take that phenomenon across the whole of life experience every day. We are editing reality all the time based on our beliefs. But anyway, what happened is this guy, Tom, was sat down, and the hypnotist said to him, when I bring you back from a waking state, you're not going to be able to see your daughter. And what he did then was led the daughter to stand right in front of her father, so he's looking into a midriff. He then brings him out of the trance state, apparently so, and says to him, Tom, can you see your daughter? And he looks around the room, and he says, no, I can't see her, she's not here. She starts giggling, but he can't hear her. The hypnotist then goes behind the daughter and puts his hand in the small of her back and said, I'm holding something, Tom, what is it? And Tom looked bemused because it looked obvious to him. He says, you're holding a watch. He said, there's an inscription on the watch. Can you read it? He peered forward and read it. Everything is going on behind the daughter's back between him and the watch and Tom. Now, this would seem to be, and would be, on the basis of, yes, this world is solid and this is all kind of real and it's, you know, it's not an illusion, it would be impossible. But when you realize that we are constructing reality in our own minds, it makes total sense, because we talk about living in the universe, but actually, if there's 6 billion people on this planet, they're living in 6 billion universes. Mm-hmm. The question was, though, William, and this was really the crux of this book, that it was a very good question that needed to be asked. Okay, we are creating our own reality by our belief and our sense of perception and our point of observation. Okay, but how come we all see the same car going past the window? How come we all see the same forest and the same two people crossing the road? That was the question. And I was looking for what is it that plugs us into this collective reality. And then a friend of mine came round. He used to be a health investigator for the government in Britain. He used to investigate health things that health issues and health situations that were either strange or perhaps needed criminal investigation. One of the things he did, just as a quick aside, he was telling me the other night, this has been an interesting point to follow up for someone. I was telling him the story very quickly of how Greta Mutwa's wife, Virginia, was pronounced dead at 3 o'clock and woke up absolutely alive 6 hours later in the mortuary. And he said, well, when I was an investigator, he said, health investigator, he said, I investigated a number of cases of people who were pronounced dead and woke up in mortuaries perfectly alive. And he said, you know what one of the common theme that when they woke up in the morgue, but he wanted to put that in his reports and they wouldn't let him. So this guy he's an alternative healer and a brilliant one. He's worked on me and my family and had terrific results. Anyway, he comes round to see me. I haven't seen him for a while. And we started talking, and he said something about DNA. He said, oh, years ago, he said, I wrote a report about DNA. Mm-hmm. He said, and that they're only now starting to find out some of the things that I wrote that DNA was about. And he said to me, he said, DNA is a crystalline substance, which is a receptor transmitter, a receiver transmitter of light, of information. And when he said it, it was like someone had just come up and smacked me on the head. Lights went on all over the place. And I started going down this road of looking at what is DNA. And what I talk about in the book is it's DNA that connects us into the matrix, that connects us into this collective reality. Because people don't realize, you know, we talk about DNA, and you hear people talk about DNA and scientists. They do it when, in a way that gives you the image that they suck DNA. Oh, yes, DNA, we know about DNA. They don't know nothing about DNA, virtually. Right. Depending on the scientists you talk to, anything between 90 and 97% of DNA, conventional science calls junk DNA, because they don't know what it does. And it's this that is connecting us into the matrix, and it's this that is tuning us in to the collective reality. And what I describe it like in the book is like we live, this matrix is like a holographic internet, and we, through the body brain, connect into it, through the DNA really, connect into it, in the same way that if you log on to the internet in China or the United States or Britain or Germany, you are logging in to the same collective reality. Now, when you do that, you can make different choices and decisions and opinions on what you think of it. That's how we put our unique little spin on this collective reality. We see the same car, but you might like it, I might not. But we're sharing the same collective reality. Now, this, what's happening in terms of the DNA and what I call the biological computer, the body, is that it is connecting us in to this waveform network, the matrix, and we are decoding the signals like a computer into, instead of a flat picture internet, a holographic, apparently three-dimensional internet. And what kind of took me aback is when I'd finished the book and it was going off to the design that you put together as a book, I came across this article about geneticists and linguists and various other people to try to find out what this junk DNA actually was and what it did, and they concluded that the body is a biological computer, which is exactly where I'd come from a completely different point of view, a starting point, and that knowledge is the knowledge that can set us free.
Why should you subscribe to UnknownCountry.com and put down your hard-earned cash? Well, there's two good reasons. The first one is The website is important. It is the only place where you read so many important stories. Virtually the only place that gave you in-depth reporting about the slowing of the Gulf Stream. Do you know that we were reporting this in our Quick Watch over a year ago? We were over a year ahead, even of the scientific community. You won't get that anywhere else. You just will not find your way into the future anywhere better than you will find it with UnknownCountry.com. And another great reason to do it today, you get to listen to me talk to David Icke. He is the subscriber interview this week. And remember, every week subscribers get a special interview. It's well worth it. Join us today. Keep UnknownCountry.com going by clicking on that subscribe tab on the Unknown Country website. Listen up. William Henry's got a new DVD out, and that means something. A lot of you got his DVD Stargate 2012 absolutely free. Well, now you can get Stargates of the Gods, his brand new DVD, plus Stargate 2012 thrown in. A phenomenal offer. And listen as William tells you about this new DVD, Stargates of the Gods.
An ancient prophecy, a miraculous new spiritual technology, a bright new world. In this hour and a half long talk, I piece together Sumerian, Egyptian, and Mayan artwork and symbolism to reveal their shared ideal, the long-sought Stargate of the Gods, the angelic stairway to heaven. This groundbreaking presentation is loaded with an amazing collection of ancient images never before seen in one place. Get Stargate 2012, my friends. I guarantee you'll watch it time and again.
Get Stargate of the Gods plus Stargate 2012 thrown in absolutely free at the UnknownCountry.com store. Go to the store right now to get them. You know, the UnknownCountry.com store is a very special and unique place. Everything in it is deeply valuable, intellectually, spiritually. It is mind-opening material. I've read practically every book in here. If I haven't read it, Anne has, or William Henry has, or Jim Mars has. These are important books, and our prices are great. William's brand new Stargates of the God DVD, $24.95. The Magdalene Legacy by Lawrence Gardner, phenomenal book, just $19.95. Dr. Roger Lear's latest UFO crash in Brazil, terribly important, $14.95. Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, unobtainable elsewhere, $24.95. Eyes of an Angel, Paul Elder's Beauty, $12.95. Doug Kenyon's Forbidden History, $13.95. The 9/11 in Plain Sight DVD, the lowest price we believe anywhere at $13.95. The list goes on and on and on. Explore the UnknownCountry.com store, and you get excellent security, just as you do from larger websites, because we're small, we're intimate, and if you do have a problem, a real person answers your question via email, usually just about right away. Chop the UnknownCountry.com store.
This is William Henry. This is Dreamland. My guest today is David Icke. His new book, Infinite Love is All There Is, Everything Else is Just an Illusion, is available at bridgeoflove.com. His narrative, supported by Neil Haig's superb color illustrations, will change the reality, the life of everyone who has the courage to read it. I found myself appreciating all that I encounter in a more loving way while reading the book, and I know it's need-to-know information for everybody in the Dreamland audience. David, you are making the point that the human body is a biological computer. The DNA that makes up our body are tuners or receivers that is captured within this massive net called the matrix. As you're speaking, I'm recalling some of the Sumerian myth that Zechariah Sitchin had reinterpreted, in which the Anunnaki used a weapon system called a net, where they virtually trapped an entire sector of space within this net. And I wonder if you could comment on perhaps the correspondence between this ancient image of this, of the net of the Anunnaki, with this concept of the matrix and the way we're enfolded or entrapped within it.
Well, they could well be connected, because when you start looking at this this whole network, I'm talking about this DNA network, this matrix network, It's not just that we are receiving information, we're also transmitting it. And what's kind of interesting is that the nature of a hologram is that every single part of a hologram contains a smaller version of the whole. If you take a holographic print and you cut it into four and you fire the laser at it, you do not get a quarter version of the size of the picture. You get four smaller versions of the whole picture.
Right.
The fact that the body is a hologram explains why every single cell in the body contains all the information necessary to grow a whole body, because it's a hologram and must be like that. This is why reflexology and acupuncture and all these other alternative healing disciplines can find all areas of the body, in the foot, in the ear, in the hand, wherever.
Right.
And this takes us on to the next level of that, which is what I'm suggesting is that we are not only holographic in terms of our body, but we are experiencing a what I call a super hologram, which is the Matrix, and which has all the smaller levels of that hologram within it in various forms. So if you take that and project it to the bigger picture, the basic structure of the body hologram must be reflected in the super hologram. And what we have in the body is the DNA that is receiving and transmitting information. We have the brain, which I call the central processing unit of the body, the central processing unit of the biological computer where all the traffic goes through and is interpreted. If we are a hologram within the super hologram must also have its version of the brain, its version of DNA receiving and transmitting. And for me, it's a two-way thing. We are receiving information, but at the same time, we are transmitting information, not just between each other, but back to the Matrix. And for me, this is what evolution is. What we call evolution, when for instance, an animal will change its environment, and over a period, that animal's look and everything will change to fit in with the environment. For me, this two-way process of communication is what we call evolution. But the point that I make in the book, and this is the crucial one, I think, is that the reason we're caught in it is because we identify the biological computer, the body, with who we are. And if you do that, then the computer runs the show, not consciousness, which I define in the book, because everything's conscious, everything within the Matrix is conscious. I define consciousness for the purposes of the book as that which is beyond the Matrix, that is, which is not caught in the illusion. And so to connect with that consciousness is not very easy when you're identifying who you are with the computer, i.e., I'm David Icke, I was born in Leicester, and this is who I am. Because it's clear to me that what we call mind, thought, when we think, and emotion are actually part of the program. And someone once said something brilliant. They said, we are not our thoughts, we are the silence between them. And for me, that silence between the thoughts is who we are in terms of infinite consciousness. And infinite consciousness is all-knowing. It doesn't have to think and work it out and go through all the chatter that we go through all the time through thought. It knows, it's all-knowing. That's why it's silent. It doesn't need to think. It just knows. And we have got caught in identifying our thoughts and our emotions with who we are, and we've lost sight of the fact that we are actually that all-knowing silence between them. This is why when people go into a meditative state, they can often get great insight into things which they can't when the chatter's going, all the noise and pollution, the noise pollution that's going on all the time in this five-sense world, is because they're accessing all-knowingness, which is what they really are. And I find it interesting that psychologists say that they can break human personalities down into like 12 archetypes and combinations of those archetypes. Mm-hmm. My question is, well, hold on a minute. If we are talking here about all possibility, how come you can break down human personalities into about 12 archetypes and combinations of them? Because they are not talking in terms of those archetypes, I would suggest, about all-knowing, infinite consciousness, all possibility. They are identifying the traits of the program,
exactly.
The body programs, the personality programs. Because we react so predictably because we're caught in following the program and not following infinite consciousness. When you access that, that's when you become a maverick. That's when you're doing things against the tide. And people say, what's he doing? He's strange. No, he's connected. Not strange. Strange to you because you're following the program. And it's like riding a horse, the body, when the body is actually deciding where you go, not the rider, consciousness. And that's where we've got caught. And if we can get that connection back to knowing who we are, which is not David Icke from Leicester or William Henry, these are just names for experiences. We are infinite consciousness. When we get to that level, then we can start taking control back from the program, from the matrix, because compared with the matrix, infinite consciousness is just indescribable in terms of its greater power, understanding, and everything. I mean, you know, the matrix is a two-stone weakling faced with infinite consciousness, but not if we don't access it and follow the program, because then the matrix controls us.
Yeah, in the book you say or note that unless we operate from that higher level of awareness beyond emotional reaction, the matrix is going to continue to construct our reality. And as you know, it's the limbic system of the brain. And I thought you did some fantastic research on the brain, by the way. You note that it's the limbic system, the amygdala, hypothalamus region of the brain that's responsible for regulating our emotional state. And this is precisely the region of the brain that's targeted by the chemicals used in mass market.
Exactly. Exactly. It's clear when you, the more that I understand the bigger picture, the more clear it is why the five sense level of this, the daily society, is structured as it is. Whether it's monosodium glutamate, which is what? Tricking the brain to decode more taste than is there. Whether it's aspartame, whether it's fluoride in the water, whether it's mobile phones or mobile phone masts, they are all throwing out the balance of the brain and the way it reads reality. Once you do that, it's more and more difficult for consciousness to express itself. It's like me sitting here trying to work a computer that's got a virus. It's very difficult to make it do what you want to do because it's not working properly. And there is this assault on the body. And what's interesting to me is that not only do our emotions react to chemicals that are introduced to the body, we produce chemical reactions in the body, in the computer, when we feel emotions. And the receptors on the cells that receive these chemicals are exactly the same receptors that receive drugs like heroin and pharmaceutical drugs and all the rest of it. And I've been saying for years, just by observing, and not only observing other people, but observing myself. I mean, I'm not sitting cross-legged on a mountain here saying, hey, I'll enlighten you all. I mean, I'm going through this and all learning from experiencing this computer too. And it was clear that people in large numbers are addicted to certain emotions. I've called it in previous books emotional addiction. Now I understand why they're addicted. They're addicted because they are addicted to the fix of the chemical that is released by that emotion.
This is William Henry. This is Dreamland. We'll be right back.
Why should you subscribe to UnknownCountry.com and put down your hard-earned cash? Well, there's two good reasons. The first one is the website is important. It is the only place where you read so many important stories. virtually the only place that gave you in-depth reporting about the slowing of the Gulf Stream. Do you know that we were reporting this in our Quick Watch over a year ago? We were over a year ahead, even of the scientific community. You won't get that anywhere else. You just will not find your way into the future anywhere better than you will find it with unknowncountry.com. And another great reason to do it today, you get to listen to me talk to David Icke. He is the subscriber interview this week. And remember, every week, subscribers get a special interview. It's well worth it. Join us today. Keep unknowncountry.com going by clicking on that subscribe tab on the Unknown Country website. Listen up, William Henry's got a new DVD out, and that means something. A lot of you got his DVD, Stargate 2012, absolutely free. Well, now you can get Stargates of the Gods, his brand new DVD, plus Stargate 2012 thrown in, a phenomenal offer. And listen as William tells you about this new DVD, Stargates of the Gods.
An ancient prophecy, a miraculous new spiritual technology, a bright new world. In this hour-and-a-half-long talk, I piece together Sumerian, Egyptian, and Mayan artwork and symbolism to reveal their shared ideal, the long-sought Stargate of the Gods, the angelic stairway to heaven. This groundbreaking presentation is loaded with an amazing collection of ancient images never before seen in one place. Get Stargate 2012, my friends. I guarantee you'll watch it time and again.
Get Stargate of the Gods plus Stargate 2012 thrown in absolutely free at the unknowncountry.com store. Go to the store right now to get them. You know, the unknowncountry.com store is a very special and unique place. Everything in it is deeply valuable, intellectually, spiritually. It is mind-opening material. I've read practically every book in here. If I haven't read it, Anne has, or William Henry has, or Jim Mars has. These are important books, and our prices are great. William's brand new Stargates of the God DVD, $24.95. The Magdalene Legacy by Lawrence Gardner, phenomenal book, just $19.95. Dr. Roger Lear's latest UFO crash in Brazil, terribly important, $14.95. Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, unobtainable elsewhere, $24.95. Eyes of an Angel, Paul Elder's Beauty, $12.95. Doug Kenyon's Forbidden History, $13.95. The 9/11 in Plain Sight DVD, the lowest price we believe anywhere at $13.95. The list goes on and on and on. Explore the unknowncountry.com store and you get excellent security just as you do from larger websites, because we're small, we're intimate, and if you do have a problem, a real person answers your question via email, usually just about right away. Shop the unknowncountry.com store.
This is William Henry. This is Dreamland. We're talking with David Icke. By the way, the entire catalog of David Icke's books and video presentations are available at bridgeoflove.com. In addition, visit davidicke.com, one of the web's most visited websites on conspiracy material, and I'm sure by listening to David today you can tell why. David, when we had to cut away to that break, you were talking about how people are addicted to emotions and the chemicals of these emotions. Could you continue along with that, please?
Yeah, this is why people get addicted to being depressed. And it was interesting. I watched a film which showed how the brain, when you get into a certain emotional state, the brain creates like a network of connections that relate to that emotional state, like depression. And what happens is that unless that emotional state is changed, the reality of that person is then decoded through this network of brain connections. In other words, it's decoding the reality the person experiences to fit in with the belief in what the world is like for them, i.e. it's depressing, the The glass is never full, or it's never half full. It's always half empty, or empty completely. And, you know, my mother has this phrase about some people. She says, you know, it's being so miserable it keeps them going. And often you can see that in people. And it's also, you know, people say, I'm addicted to love. They'll jump from one partner to another partner to another partner because they're addicted to that chemical that comes with the first you know, connection of love and attraction. So all the time we are being subject to these various chemical reactions that affect our emotions, or the emotions that create other chemical reactions. And when you then, as you quite rightly said earlier, William, introduce all this stuff now that is in our food and drink, we are being frazzled chemically. And it's affecting us emotionally, and it's affecting us physically, and it's affecting us mentally in terms of our ability to think straight. And the vast overwhelming majority of the problems that are being highlighted in children in terms of behavior, when you chart them back, it goes to when this explosion of chemicals started appearing in their food and drink. I mean, you know, soft drinks, what you call in America sodas. I mean, please, it's poison. And it's poisoning people's ability to think and ability to have balanced emotions. This is why they're going, off the rails, because they are imbalanced. They're imbalanced because there's a chemical imbalance.
In the book, you make a very insightful observation concerning the correspondence between brain activity or usage, DNA, and dark matter. Tell us about that for a moment.
Well, you know, if you're going to control billions of people, fundamental to that is you've got to keep them ignorant of not only of what there is to know, but what is known even in the public domain. And, you know, it's been such a revelation for me. I mean, I was a guy, I never went to university or college or anything like that. I went to the lowest school you could imagine in the stream in England in the 50s and 60s, and then went off to be a professional soccer player. I've done all my learning in my own time, under my own control. And so it's been a revelation to me to find out just how much is known that the people don't know about. And people say things like, I saw it with my own eyes. And I say to people, when you look through your eyes, what do you see? Do you see everything that exists in the space? Well, yeah, mate. Well, how can you? Do you see the level of x-rays? Can you see what x-rays see? Can you see what infrared sees? No. Well, no. We can only see, and even then we see with our brain, our eyes, we can only perceive the most staggeringly tiny frequency range known as visible light. It's only a small part of what science says exists in the universe. So we're actually interacting in this five-sense reality with a tiny, tiny frequency range of perception, and then laughing at anyone that says that there are entities that exist outside this visible light range that actually look very different to us. Oh, you're mad, mate. You're not a staff. Someone once said, or rather, I saw a car sticker once in California, and it said, you laugh at me because I'm different. I laugh at you because you're all the same. And it is a different way of looking at it. But the thing is, what exists in this vast, vast area that we cannot see? And that's only what the science says up to this point exists. Of course, far more exists. And when you look at some of the figures, I know they're approximate, but they are quite instructive, I would suggest. 95%, take a mean figure, of DNA is known as junk DNA by science because they don't know what it does.
Right.
Something like 95% and then some of what is said to exist in the universe, we cannot see. And then you get something like 95% of brain activity or what the brain is doing does not relate to the waking state. Now, these figures are quite compelling in the sense of, I think I see an elephant in the living room here.
Right.
And for me, what's happening, and this is what these Russian scientists decided was happening, funnily enough, is that this 90-odd percent of junk DNA is, to a large part, connecting us in to these other infinite levels of reality. But we are imprisoned within a very small area of potential experience, which is visible light, the five senses. We talk about the sixth sense. Well, it's the sixth sense and then a heck of a lot more. And the sixth sense and these other levels beyond visible light, beyond what we think we can see, that's what this other vast areas of this other so-called junk DNA is connecting us into. And when you open yourself to it, you can travel beyond this five-sense reality and experience and access knowledge and understanding that's not available here in this matrix. What the whole of society is structured to do, if you look at it, is to hold us in five-sense reality. Everything is to entice the five senses of sight, of taste, of all the others, touch. It's trying to hold us into the five-sense reality. But when you go beyond that, and it's more than symbolic that five-sense reality occupies a fraction of DNA, and the rest of it occupies the rest of DNA. It's because what exists beyond this five-sense world is infinite, and not the finite reality that we perceive here.
Infinite love is the only truth. Everything else is just an illusion, is the title of David Icke's new book. Get it from bridgeoflove.com. David, I love the story that you told about your awakening in Brazil. Could you, in the few moments that we have left, tell us a little bit about what you experienced in Brazil and how this led to this awakening?
Well, the funny thing was that I had been feeling in the run-up to going to Brazil, or being asked to go, that what I needed to do if I was going to go to the next stage was I needed to see on the five senses and see... Get a fix on what existed there. And I was brought up in the 60s, never took a psychedelic drug or anything, none of it. And I've only taken it three times ever, and I've never done it since because I don't need it. It taught me something. Now I want to go there without that stuff, and that's what, because that can be addictive too, and you can get addictive to go, and again you go round and round and round in the vortex and don't move on.
Sure.
But when I took this plant called ayahuasca in Brazil over two nights, it took me into a realm where I did experience and saw what lay beyond this reality, and this was just bliss beyond belief. And this voice, very clear, loud, dignified voice, talked to me for 5 hours in a very, very compelling way about the nature of reality. It's what started me on this journey that I'm going into now. And what it said was, forget all the complexity, forget all the things that all the diversions that pull you here and pull you there. There's only one thing you really need to know. Infinite love is the only truth. Everything else is illusion. And it said it over and over and over again. And what it was saying was infinite love is infinite everything. It's infinite intelligence, infinite wisdom, infinite knowing. It's that level that is all, that does not think, that does not, to use the term, emote. It just is. It just knows. And when you hold that understanding, that that's all that there is, that's the only truth, the existence of that. Everything else comes from the imagination of that one consciousness. Then you start to see the world in a completely different way, and you start to live life instead of, as most of us have done, let life live us. When we let life live us, what we're doing is we're letting the program dictate our reality.
David Icke, thank you so much for joining us today on Dreamland. It's been a wonderful pleasure.
Listen up, William Henry's got a new DVD out, and that means something. A lot of you got his DVD, Stargate 2012, absolutely free. Well, now you can get Stargates of the Gods, his brand new DVD, plus Stargate 2012 thrown in, a phenomenal offer. And listen as William tells you about this new DVD, Stargates of the Gods.
an ancient prophecy, a miraculous new spiritual technology, a bright new world. In this hour-and-a-half-long talk, I pieced together Sumerian, Egyptian, and Mayan artwork and symbolism to reveal their shared ideal, the long-sought Stargate of the Gods, the angelic stairway to heaven. This groundbreaking presentation is loaded with an amazing collection of ancient images never before seen in one place. Get Stargate 2012, my friends. I guarantee you'll watch it time and again.
Get Stargate of the Gods plus Stargate 2012 thrown in absolutely free at the unknowncountry.com store. Go to the store right now to get them. You know, the unknowncountry.com store is a very special and unique place. Everything in it is deeply valuable, intellectually, spiritually. It is mind-opening material. I've read practically every book in here. If I haven't read it, Anne has, or William Henry has, or Jim Mars has. These are important books, and our prices are great. William's brand new Stargates of the God DVD, $24.95. The Magdalene Legacy by Lawrence Gardner, phenomenal book, just $19.95. Dr. Roger Lear's latest UFO crash in Brazil, terribly important, $14.95. Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, unobtainable elsewhere, $24.95. Eyes of an Angel, Paul Elder's Beauty, $12.95. Doug Kenyon's Forbidden History, $13.95. The 9/11 in Plain Sight DVD, the lowest price we believe anywhere at $13.95. The list goes on and on and on. Explore the unknowncountry.com store and you get excellent security just as you do from larger websites, because we're small, we're intimate, and if you do have a problem, a real person answers your question via email, usually just about right away. Shop the unknowncountry.com store. You're about to experience something that you just can't get elsewhere. Emmy award-winning science reporter Linda Moulton Howe reporting on the absolute leading edge of science, discovery, and the true mysteries of the unknown. Don't miss her website, earthfiles.com, the one science website that tells you the secret and gives you the facts others dare not. Earthfiles.com. This week she's reporting on something terribly important, the status of the bird flu virus, the real story. Here she is from Albuquerque, Linda Moulton Howe.
Thanks, Whitley. And it is becoming incredibly disturbing. First, I'm going to talk about another virus that's here in the United States that is changing enough to also raise red flags to medical authorities about what it could do this season of 2005 to 2006. A medical authority at the National Institutes of Health in Washington, D.C., told Associated Press this week that the West Nile fever virus working its way through America is more virulent than its viral cousin in Europe, Asia, and Africa, and, quote, has caused more cases of paralysis than there were in many years of polio, unquote. By 2005, it has spread to nearly every state. In 2004, one-third of American West Nile fever cases reported to the Centers for Disease Control had brain and nervous system complications such as meningitis and encephalitis. Worse, in a CDC study to be published next month in July 2005, an estimated 10% of Americans who develop the most severe form of West Nile disease will have polio-like paralysis. Many patients are in their 30s to their 50s. The growing paralysis problems are of great concern, as well as the death toll. Since 1999, CDC has officially accounted for more than 16,600 human cases and 654 deaths. One West Nile victim whose left leg has been paralyzed from the waist down since 2003 is 56-year-old Patricia Heller, who works for a doctor in Boulder, Colorado. Until the virus hit her, she was a healthy skier and bicyclist. Today, she says, quote, there was no recognition that West Nile could paralyze and kill people that were healthy and relatively young. We were really caught off guard, unquote. Doctors also now realize that recovery from a West Nile virus attack can take weeks. The Chicago Health Department data on West Nile cases found that 50% of known patients were sick for 10 days at least, and on average, it took those patients 2 months to get over lingering chronic fatigue. Another virus mutation that has the entire world medical community nervous is the bird flu in Southeast Asia that has now jumped from birds to humans and pigs. 54 people are dead from bird flu, which is also known medically as H5N1 influenza. Chinese officials say a recent flu outbreak among wild birds is twice as large as they thought. 178 bar-headed geese found dead the first week of May on a nature reserve were dead from H5N1 flu. Now all nature reserves in China have been sealed off. Avian influenza could also be infecting up to half of the pig population in some areas of Indonesia without causing symptoms in the pigs, the journal Nature reported recently. One Indonesian virologist told Nature, quote, I think pigs pose a much greater threat of spreading the disease to humans than poultry, unquote. The reason is that swine are very close genetically to humans. Therefore, human and avian flu viruses can exchange genetic information, which could lead to a hybrid virus with the ability to spread easily among people. Health organizations around the world dread the increasing and dangerous possibility that bird flu could be the next worldwide pandemic. Even in Brazil at the end of May, authorities ordered the slaughter of 17,000 chickens after 6,500 died from a mysterious respiratory illness in the Brazilian state of Mato Grosso do Sul. Officials worry that the illness might be H5N1. Lab results will be reported this month. The dangerous H5N1 bird flu did not emerge until 8 years ago in 1997, when chickens in Guangdong Province, China, outside of Hong Kong, became ill, and some people got sick then and died. The government ordered all the chickens in the province to be killed and burned, but that did not stop the H5N1 virus. It has spread to all domestic bird populations throughout Southeast Asia, including domestic and wild. And now it's just a matter of time, medical experts say, before more efficient spread from human to human begins, setting off what could be a horrific pandemic. Airplane travel around the globe means the bird flu virus can spread quickly, as SARS did in 2003. One American epidemiologist thinks a pandemic could start within the next 2 years. He is Dr. Michael Osterholm, professor of epidemiology and director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis.
The H5N1 situation in Southeast Asia is in a very precarious point right now, in that we have had ongoing transmission to humans in a very limited way, namely that the virus was able to enter into the lung cells of a very small number of people. What we are concerned about are really two factors. One is how easily can it get into lung cells of humans, and that is one part of the virus that currently must change even more to make that really efficient. But the second part of it is, can humans then transmit it to others? And that requires a second part of the virus to also change to allow it to basically explode out of the human lung cells. And unfortunately, in both instances, the virus is emerging that way, and that's why we're so concerned that although we've been dealing with these limited number of cases for the past several years, it might very well only be a matter of days to weeks to months before we see that virus change enough so that it would start to be transmitted readily between humans and then start the world pandemic.
In this global planet right now, if H5N1 could transmit from human to human, like SARS, with very little immunity, if zero, what do you realistically expect the consequences would be in the human population?
Well, first of all, any pandemic strain of influenza, namely a strain that has not previously been seen in the human population, or one that was seen 50 or more years ago, and thus very few people alive would still have protective antibody from it, is always a problem for us. We worry about that because of the increased number of deaths that would occur with that kind of a situation. But also we worry about which strain of the virus emerges, because we have clear evidence that not all pandemics are equal in their ability to kill. Some are moderately effective, some are even very effective. And so when you combine a situation where you have a very effective virus at causing disease and death, combined with it has not been seen in the population, so there's no residual protection in the population for many years, it's kind of the perfect storm of influenza pandemics. And unfortunately, that would be the case right now with the H5N1. This virus has been a very lethal type virus, as viruses go, in the influenza area in the humans in Southeast Asia, and I might even add in the domestic bird population. And it clearly is one that we have not seen on a worldwide basis in any measurable human history, meaning dating back to 100 years ago, and we could actually measure antibody from people who were alive in the 30s and 40s that would tell us, was that virus even around in the late 1800s? So we don't have any recent experience with it, and would mean that we're very vulnerable, and that with the severity of this virus infection, it could also be very lethal.
How many people died with the 1918 swine flu?
Recent studies conducted by a group of historians have actually gone back country by country to look at the 1918-19 pandemic, and the really, I think, most thoughtful and very well researched numbers now estimate that between 50 to 100 million people died during the 1918 pandemic, and many of those died actually from the same kind of illness that we're seeing in the H5N1 patients today, a thing called a cytokine storm, or an immune reaction that the body has actually to the virus. This is why we're so concerned about the H5N1, because it looks like it could be a duplicating kind of experience in 1918. Let me just add one additional piece that's so critical, is that the 1918 population numbered only about 1.8 billion people on the face of the earth. Today, we have 6.5 billion people. So that even if the 1918-like experience were to occur today, you're talking, using those 1918 numbers, of anywhere from 180 to 360 million people could die from this particular strain of virus.
When you talk with your colleagues, both here in the United States and internationally now, what is your worst case?
At this point, none of us know when and where the next pandemic will begin. But we can tell you that it's going to happen. Pandemics and influenza are just a part of Mother Nature. There have been 10 of them in the last 300 years around the world, some of them much more severe, like one in 1830, one in 1918, others less severe, like the one in 1957 and the one in 1968. We're overdue for another pandemic. It is going to occur. That's a matter of what type of illness we see with the patients. Nonetheless, we'll still have millions of deaths. It's just a matter of we have many millions or millions of deaths. And I think that that's the point that we all recognize and can say with some certainty, just like hurricanes, earthquakes, and volcanic activity will occur, so will pandemics.
And what do you in the medical community do?
Well, at this point, the single most important weapon we can bring to bear to this is vaccine. And unfortunately, we're still dealing largely with a 1950s vaccine, meaning that we've not really progressed much in either technology or in the ability to produce the vaccine than we had 50 years ago. That is our single biggest stumbling block. Right now, we wouldn't have any vaccine for probably 6 months into the pandemic, because we have to use the strain that is circulating once it starts causing that pandemic as the seed strain to make the vaccine. And second of all, is we really only have a very limited amount of capacity on a worldwide basis to make this vaccine. Today, we could make at most about 350 to 400 million doses of this vaccine as it's currently constituted. We could probably stretch that to as much as a billion doses. But having said that, it's going to take at least two doses per person. So in the end, if you do the math, it comes out to about 500 million people could get vaccine in the first year, not right away, in the first year.
So
that's only about 14% of the world's population.
What is the worst case for the planet if H5N1 does take off and transmit human to human?
I can't imagine anything more catastrophic affecting the human race today than a pandemic of H5N1 influenza around the world. is we talked about the 1918-1919 experience. If we were to have a similar experience, and I might add there are a number of reasons why modern medical technology will not do much to change that. We don't have the medicines or the capacity today, much more than we had in 1918, for this type of illness. That being said, if we had even 180 million illnesses, which would be the low end of the range looking at the 1918 experience, that would give you some context in that if you look at HIV/AIDS, as horrible as it has been to date, only about 26 million, and I say only, not in disrespect, only 26 million people have died. Pandemic influenza in 1 year could do what HIV hasn't done in 35 years.
Yeah. And what do you think the likelihood is that H5N1 could take off in 2005 or 2006?
I can't say with certainty that this is going to be the strain that will take off. I think that there's every indication it will be. I think that it's going to happen sooner than later. But again, I come back to the point that we as a world have to understand another pandemic of influenza will occur. And therefore, while this is surely the highest risk candidate we have right now, we can't take comfort in the fact that even if it didn't emerge, that we're out of the woods. We have to understand that pandemic influenza is a reality of our world, just as our hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, and other meteorologic-like events. And we have to be prepared for this, and unfortunately, right now, we're not.
What do you think is the most likely scenario? I'm assuming beginning in Asia, but could you describe for me what you think might happen if H5N1 takes off in the human population?
As soon as we document transmission of H5N1 at a community level or a regional level in the world, there will be an immediate cry to close borders in an attempt to try to slow the spread of it down. We will see overnight, literally, the stopping of international trade and travel as we currently know it. This, in turn, will lead to a whole series of economic and product availability events, which will be devastating because we live in this global just-in-time economy, and many of the goods and items that we expect and need every day to live and exist in this country, for example, will not be available. That'll be true worldwide. Also, we will watch through the eyes of the international media this infection literally march around the world, and so we'll get to see firsthand the kinds of devastation that will occur country by country. Even with the borders closed, there's no doubt in my mind that because of all the movement of people, illegal and legal, that we will still see the virus make its way around the world quickly, and it won't be long, and all the continents will be involved.
And I'm assuming that quarantine would be the order of the day?
Quarantine will be something that every world leader will want to use immediately as some way to protect themselves. And while it may slow the virus spread down, it's a lot like putting screen doors on a submarine. It still will not make it. And so we will see this virus move quickly, even with quarantine.
What would you tell your own family if it is now raging in the United States?
Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of information that we can tell our loved ones and our colleagues that's going to bring great comfort. This is going to be a difficult situation. We currently today don't have the vaccines, the medicines, or any other means of really stopping this transmission. The best we can do is try to reduce it. And frankly, on a given day, there is no magic bullet that we're going to be able to bring forward, short of having an international vaccine supply, which is not in the cards right now.
I've heard announcements from the National Institutes of Health that they are trying to anticipate the potential spread of H5 and are trying to come up with some kind of a vaccine. How can they do that without having the exact virus that they would have to be protecting against?
Currently, efforts at the NIH are really directed at taking the currently circulating H5N1 strain and making early vaccines to it to try to study it to see how it really affects people's immune system, how we can actually administer it and reduce the amount of material that's provided each individual, thus trying to stretch the vaccine. And so those pieces of work are going on right now. Unfortunately, we really want and we believe we need the actual circulating strain to get the best protection. But this work that's being done right now by the NIH is very critical. Let me add that one last piece, though, which is the reality of our vaccine supply system today is that, of course, even if we come up with the magic bullet vaccine, we don't have the industrial or government capacity to make much vaccine. And so even in a year's time, we could only hope to make anywhere between somewhere around the 500 million protective dose level for the entire world, which is less than 14% of the world's population.
So what you're saying is that if the H5 virus should begin to spread among humans this year or next year, the really only possible scenario is a tremendous amount of death until the virus itself is stopped by all the death?
At this point, we have to realize that pandemics, while as horrible as they are, do go away. And what we mean by that is that eventually the strain that is so deadly will lessen in its ability to kill and will ultimately become the circulating strain that we see from winter to winter. And when that happens, we still worry about it because we know in this country each year up to 35 to 50,000 people still die from a routine garden variety influenza. But it will basically, say, attenuate itself or weaken to the point where it will become that strain and not the one that is so deadly that it could kill millions and millions. Unfortunately, that's a heck of a price to pay to get to that point of that virus attenuation. But we do know that pandemics won't go on forever.
Meaning that we may lose up to 300 million people around the world.
We sure could. I would say before, that's a hell of a price to pay to get through a pandemic.
The World Health Organization, known as WHO, recently said in its website, quote, "Who believe the appearance of H5N1, which is now widely entrenched in Asia, signals that the world has moved closer to the next pandemic. While it is impossible to accurately forecast the magnitude of the next pandemic, we do know that much of the world is unprepared for a pandemic of any size," unquote. And this week, New Scientist magazine reports, quote, "Amid recent signs that H5N1 bird flu virus is acquiring the ability to spread more rapidly among people, many health authorities are pinning their hopes on Tamiflu, that's spelled T-A-M-I-F-L-U, the only available antiviral drug known to be effective in blocking this virus. But Tamiflu is in short supply and may not be enough to stop a pandemic anyway. In the meantime, the World Health Organization is stepping up efforts to acquire a massive stockpile of Tamiflu, which it hopes will at least slow down any emerging pandemic," unquote. The problem is, as Dr. Osterholm emphasized, whatever vaccine or antiviral drug is produced, there are no facilities in any nation on this planet big enough to manufacture the 12 billion doses needed to protect the world's population from the next pandemic. It's an amazing story, Whitley, because it appears to be closer than anyone ever thought that we would be at this point in 2005.
Well, you know, Linda, there is a way to increase the strength of the immune system. There is a substance called beta-glucan, B-E-T-A-G-L-U-C-A-N, which is readily obtainable. Natrol is one company that makes it that I use. Beta Precise is another that I've used, both of which products actually do contain a substantial amount of beta-glucan, and you can get them on the internet. We don't sell them on our store, but I buy them myself from Swanson Vitamins, and this is a substance that is known to significantly increase the power of the immune system to the extent that there is a study going on in Canada now that the use of beta-glucan can actually get things to the point where a person can be immunized or safe against things like anthrax, and they are known to reduce or at least anecdotally, there's no study about this, but that the increased immune system response does reduce the effectiveness of viral invaders. So in an emergency, I'm not saying this is an antidote or it's proof against anything, but it might help if you find yourself unable to get a hold of Tamiflu, or there is no vaccine, and this thing starts to spread. Another thing I want to say is this. We watch this constantly on Unknown Country. It is a red flag issue for us, and we have people watching the news in Vietnam, India, in China, and somewhere else, but I forget where, all the time for any stories, any local stories even, of individual-to-individual transmission of this disease, so that we'll try to be as early as we possibly can with the information that this has become a human-based virus.
Right, and has already killed 54 in Asia, and I learned something amazing while working on this report for Earth Files in Dreamland. Nature has done reporting on this recently, and one of the stories at the end of May was entitled Bird Flu Spreads Among Java's Pigs. And there is this very intelligent virologist in Java. He, in fact, was one of the first people in 2003 who released data showing that there were mass deaths of chickens at the time there that was directly linked to H5N1. And what happened? He got in trouble with the government because he released that information. Now, he is the who has done the test on the pigs, has been confirmed by others. And when Nature magazine, in the process of vetting its journal article, and Nature is probably one of the two most respected science Nature journals in the world, when they called up the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, known as FAO, and the World Organization for Animal Health, known as OIE, to talk and ask about what they were doing concerning now the confirmation of H5N1 in pigs, they were told, quote, it was only a rumor. This is after medical confirmation, and as Nature stressed, that the Indonesian government needs to take seriously the fact that this is already in swine that can move even more readily to humans. But this shows that in this bureaucratic world, the disconnect between the facts and what is assumed by governments is still a huge problem.
And it is completely beyond the capacity of this planet, of the population of this planet, in the form of any of its governmental institutions to deal with this. We are really just waiting for the bomb to go off at this point, Linda.
It's incredible, isn't it? And I often wonder, I've asked a few virologists, but obviously, you know, research funding and a lot of things are dependent on federal grants, and they can't be overly critical. But this is an amazing situation in the year 2005 of the 21st century. To realize that the entire medical community is expecting that we are going to be hit by a pandemic that could be potentially equivalent to 1918 swine flu, and
yes,
we don't have any facilities on the planet to generate the vaccines at the quantity necessary to what essentially would be vaccinate a 6.5 billion population.
Linda, thank you very much for a sobering report. Linda Moultonhowe's website, earthfiles.com. You better keep up with it. Things are changing fast. Earthfiles.com. Next week on Dreamland, I believe we're going to have David Ray Griffin with us, the 9/11 expert. And now people are signaling to me that that's not the case. In any case, there will be a next week's Dreamland, and David Ray Griffin is going to be on sometime soon. This has been Whitley Strieber's Dreamland. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week with another journey to the extreme edge of controversy on Dreamland. Do not miss it.